The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Unless you've been living under a rock for the past few weeks, you'll have heard an awful lot of talk on TV and radio about the Ashley Madison Extramarital Affairs website. Millions of users have had their personal details leaked onto the internet. Most of us couldn't just Google to look for these details because they are buried in what's called the Deep Web.
The Dark Web. And you won't find it on any internet search engine. For this is another world of secret websites.
It's the internet below the internet, where all of your personal information is bought and sold.
It's also important to understand that pretty much everything we do online is visible, traceable.
Now, it's a place where Google will never take you, where people...
The point is the dark web doesn't care. If we say, oh, it should be regulated, well, you can't.
Janie Mack, so what exactly is this mysterious deep web and what can you actually find down there? Well, joining me now in the studio is cyber psychologist Kieran McMahon. And I suppose I should warn you now that this could include some disturbing information which you may not wish you or your children to listen to. Kieran, what exactly is the deep web?
Thanks, Dave. The deep web, really the most basic description of it, is that which you can't access through Google. So that kind of covers a huge amount of things. And I think in this case, with the Ashley Madison, we're talking more about the dark net. Right. So that's kind of a small subsection of it. So, I mean, the deep web, things that you can't access through Google. I mean, nearly all of Facebook you can't access through Google. There's all kinds of things down there. I mean, it could be, you know, access to like different systems, even like air conditioning systems you can access through the deep web. But there's also this part called the dark net, which is a part which you can only access through specific software and using specific networks. And that's where the Ashley Madison data has ended up.
Hold on, what on Facebook can't you access on Google?
Well, you can't search Facebook through Google. So you can only search Facebook through Facebook.
All right.
So there's
Are we talking here, are there differences? Is the invisible web the same as the hidden web? And is the deep web the same as the dark net? But those last two aren't the same as the first two.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's been a lot of confusion over the terminology around this. So huge amounts of it you can't actually access through the search engines. But the thing here, the dark net, where the Ashley Madison data, this is you can only access using Tor, which is the Onion router.
Okay, I'm going to get to that now. If you want to get Facebook or YouTube or eBay or RT or The Journal or whatever it happens to be, everybody knows how to do that. At least a lot of people know how to do that, and you can do that easily enough. You mentioned there, there's a certain percentage. Are you saying that the percentage that I deal with is about 4 or 5% only, and literally, underneath the surface, that iceberg that people talk about sometimes, you see a little bit, that underneath, it's all there?
Yeah, there's
over 90%.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of information which is actually out on the internet, which you won't be able to access through Google. Or Yahoo or any of the other search engines. And the thing is, these companies like Google and the other search engine companies, they've actually done us a huge service by simply indexing all of this information so that you can search through it through Google. Otherwise, this information, you kind of have to know the address before you go there. And that's what it was like. I don't know if you remember going on the internet like in the 1990s. That's what it was like then. You couldn't search for anything. You had to know the exact address. And it's the same in these locations.
But I presume what's mostly there, not to scare people too much, is just junk.
There's a huge amount of junk. There's, there you can find all kinds of things down there. So, I mean, this sort of stuff where the Ashley Madison data has ended up in these forums, I mean, these places, like, they'll sell credit card numbers, they sell drugs, they sell weapons, they sell all kinds of things. There's all kinds of, and then there's, like, different discussions, different people meet up down there. It's an unusual place.
It's an unusual place. Okay, now, you mentioned the word Thor earlier on, and it's nothing to do with a DC Marvel comic hero, because there's no H. What is T-O-R exactly?
Okay, so basically...
That's what you need to get there.
Yeah, it's what you need to find these places. So basically, the whole idea of this is to make yourself anonymous when you're browsing the internet. So, for example, if somebody logs onto your website now from their home computer, they will access it through going through their own router. The router will link up with an exchange, which will then direct them onto the website, which is located on a server. So it's a very straight line. It goes through a number of different points, and these are all recorded. And what Tor does is it messes up those connections. So it will send you through maybe 5 or 6, maybe 7 different nodes, which it has all around the world. And the Tor community has about 6,000 of these nodes, and it will use those 6,000 to anonymize your connection to the internet. And that's the whole point of it, is that when you, is that if anybody is like the NSA or whoever is scraping the traffic from the internet, they won't be able to find
it. Yeah, I think I'm getting most of that. What exactly, though, is a node in your language there?
It's basically, it's a, it could be like a server. It's something which internet traffic is directed through.
Okay, there's a text here at 51551. It says, Google indexes 9% of the internet. It's the open web. Most people are in the closed web. Is that true, and what does that mean? That's a question for you. It says Kieran, so go ahead.
I would say most of us, like where we are, is going to be on that top percent. So the things that you're looking at, the Irish Times, RTE, Facebook, all of that is at the surface. You can search for it and you'll find it. But there's all kinds of other information which, and it's simply because, I mean, even if you set up a website yourself, you can ask not to be listed on Google's search. So that means you will end up in the deep web. Only people who know your address will be able to find you.
Well, then are we talking about websites that are, if you like, publicly visible, but hide their IP addresses of the servers that run them?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
That's really, okay. So is it safe to browse the deep web, depending on how you, I suppose, you know,
well,
the term safe, yeah.
Yeah, that, it does depend on how you term
if you're
safe.
Looking for a hitman.
Well, if you're looking for a hitman, you're probably not very safe to begin with. I would imagine, I mean, in terms of browsing it, if you're savvy enough to actually know how to use the software and set it up, you probably will have a certain amount of street smarts.
Right.
If you don't consider that you have those street smarts, I wouldn't necessarily advise it. And in fact, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, in this country, in this day and age, I'm not entirely sure what motive somebody would have for using Tor or the Onion network. So, but the thing is, and the whole reason why these things are in the news these days and why they are current is because there is a certain amount of the internet philosophy around everything should be free. We should be able to communicate with each other uninhibited and without surveillance. And that's what like Tor and the Onion routers, they're very heavily promoted in places like China, you know, countries which are like China, Russia, Middle Eastern countries where there's a lot of surveillance of the internet. So people use these so that they can communicate freely and that they can access, you know, information which would otherwise be censored.
Okay, no matter how abnormal, I presume normal rules apply. Like if something's too good to be true, then it will be true. If you have to download something, get advice. You know, if you're making a commercial transaction, never use a credit card. I mean, if you register on a hidden service site, let's say, obviously you don't use your real email address, create a throwaway email, don't use a username you've used before or about to use, not your real name. All those things apply.
Well, obviously, the buyer beware. Also, you know, the things that you can buy on there, you can't buy in shops for a reason, mostly because they're all illegal. So you can buy fake documents, you can buy drugs, you can buy guns, you can buy all of the rest of that sort of thing. And just to give you an example of how this works, so there's been a lot of talk recently about the Silk Road, which was a massive online drugs forum. And that got busted by the FBI and a lot of different operations set up. And like they look just like eBay. And so what happened over last year is that about maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen of these were systematically shut down by Europol. And they busted them all. One or two then, which were left behind, which they just missed or couldn't access, then it was one called Evolution Market was left running. And it was doing with very successful. And so, as you say, you don't use your credit card on these. You will use bitcoins, which is an online form of currency, which is more or less untraceable. Now, what happened in this one place, it's happened a couple of times since, is that it built up a huge amount of revenue and then suddenly it shut down. It wasn't busted by the police. Nobody knows what happened to it. And there was an awful lot of transactions which were current on the site, roughly about maybe 14 million euros worth of currency of bitcoins simply disappeared. So what do you do if you're buying drugs on the internet and somehow you lose your money? There's nobody you can complain to. So it's not really sure, but it seems like the people who are running this operation simply took all of the money and ran.
Right.
And they're probably living up on a beach somewhere. And that's, I mean, there isn't really any honour amongst the thieves in these places.
Really?
So, yeah, surprisingly enough.
Right. By the way, just a matter of interest, even on that score, when you're talking about that there, I remember like all the court case last year, Silk Road, wasn't that all to do with that? And the guy's in jail now for life, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in jail for life.
About 70 to 80% of what he was selling was basically illegal drugs?
Yeah, pretty much there are, I mean, there's your standard illegal drugs like cannabis and ecstasy and cocaine. There's also prescription drugs. There's huge market in prescription drugs on these sites. There's also fake documents so you can get passports and driver's license.
Yeah, yeah.
But what really got Ross Ulbricht was that he, and it was very clever this thing on him because he ordered executions of his rivals. And then I think the FBI cases that they faked these executions to bring him in. But the thing is about Ross Ulbricht, and there was another case just this week in Germany. Ross Ulbricht and this guy in Germany, they're starting to become this new form of drug dealer. You know, if you think about drug dealers that you would hear in the news here, usually like big burly guys with tattoos and guns and everything. These sort of drug dealers now, they tend to be, you know, young guys, intellectual, nerdy guys in their 20s who live at home with their parents and they run multi-million drug empires.
Arms dealing.
Oh yeah, or arms dealing. The guy in Germany was living at home with his parents and he only got caught when he was picking up packages from a package motel sort of thing, and he was carrying like, I think there was something like 4 million worth of tablets in his bedroom.
And do you have the Tor software? Have you been on the dark web?
Well, for research purposes, obviously. I <have. laughs>
thought if I threw that question in quick, you might trip up. Okay, what do you see down there? What have you seen down there?
Honestly,
I mean, like, because of the anonymity, to be perfectly honest, there's some pretty unpleasant stuff to be found down there, right?
There is. But at the same time, what it reminds me most of is what the internet was like 20 years ago. It's very slow. It's not very well designed. Most of the links are broken. The graphics aren't great. It doesn't really work very well. So I think the way we're talking about this now, it's going to become... it's going to be opened up. I mean, Facebook have an address down there, so you can access.
It's going to be opened up if it's 96% of what people like. 96% of people don't go to. I mean, crikey,
there's huge potential.
Yeah,
there.
Just a bunch here. By the way, we are talking to Kieran McMahon, who is a cyber psychologist, and 51551 is our text. It's 9:15. In years to come, will our grandchildren be able to look up our old text messages on the web the same as we can look up old censuses on the internet now? Asks Tommy.
I would say Tommy is possibly onto something there.
Wow.
Because
watch what you say in the text, folks. It might come back to haunt you or your grandchildren in five.
It's only a matter of time. See, the thing is with Ashley Madison, it's kind of funny because, you know, it's adultery and all of the rest of it. But there's been several other big hacks as well, like the Sony hack and the Office of Personnel Management. I think it's only a matter of time before something even bigger is hacked and the details are released. So text messaging could be a part of that as well.
Alan is asking, doesn't this mean that your credit card is never safe on any site? To a point, yes.
I wouldn't say so. No. I'd say that, I mean, there is a huge amount of money invested on banking websites, like, you know, your standard banking websites, which are, you know, like the likes of our major banks here, to make those things heavily secure and heavily encrypted. Nobody uses their credit card on the dark net. The only thing you'll find there is stolen credit card numbers. So you have to be careful about where you use your credit card.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, whatever we've seen in a Jean-Claude Van Damme kind of movie, we're probably aware of the ugly and disturbing nature of the pornography to be found there. Isn't it true, as I mentioned vaguely earlier on, that it's possible to actually hire a hitman on the deep web? And can you really, is it really like...
Well, I haven't tried yet.
Can you look up the Jackal and go for it?
You certainly can look up those services, but whether or not they're actually legitimate is another thing, or whether or not they're actually honeypots is another thing.
Yeah, so you pay half the money up front and then you never hear from them again.
You never hear from them again, and then you get arrested by the FBI.
Right. You would be, I would assume, pretty crazy to buy anything in the dark web. But, I mean, obviously, if you don't get what you're supposed to get, as you say yourself, all those guys hightailed with all the money.
Yeah, you can't.
Giving it up somewhere, yeah. So is there a bright side to all this? Is there anything good about it?
I think it's important to recognise why it's still being used. I think it gets an awful lot of traffic. I mean, here in our wonderful Western liberal democracy, there's not really very many legitimate uses of it. But if you're living in an oppressive regime, if you are where things were heavily censored, that's where people would use it an awful lot to communicate, to find proper resources. So if you look at some of the repressive regimes in the Middle East and further beyond, They tend to shut down access to newspapers and to the heavily censor different aspects of the media.
Sure, but could it be even safer there in some ways on the dark web if you play your cards right? You know, like if you use the kind of the Tor browser bundle or whatever, it comes pre-configured to protect you against some of the privacy threats that, you know, kind of like normal browser configurations would subject you to.
If you were, to a point. I mean, we wouldn't be allowed.
That's a very optimistic way of looking at it.
It's a very optimistic way of looking at it. And I think, you know, there's this talk about, oh, we should shut it down and clean it up. Well, number one, it's impossible to shut down. And number two, I think in our liberal society, we kind of need to have access to something like this. I mean, the fact that there's a huge amount of drug sales going on, I think does tell us something about our society and our approach to the war on drugs and so on. But, you know, it does reflect an awful lot of I guess our own deepest and darkest fears in our society that we're talking about this. So we need to have more open and honest conversations about what goes on down there. But I do think that if the political atmosphere in this country or other countries change, I think you would find an awful lot more use of Tor.
Well, a lot of businesses have to change with the way things are going now in the information age. One of those is newspapers. And, like, you know, there are a number of papers like the New York Times and the Guardian. They've got platforms on the deep web. For what reason? So you can submit stuff without you knowing who it is and they'll check it out and see if they think it's any good.
Yeah, well, there's...
If you'd rather not put a name to it, or if you'd rather not be capable of being checked out.
It is something which... Britain and the US are ahead of us on this, but I think in this country particularly, we need to have more clear processes for whistleblowing. And that's what Tor would be used for. I think there's very legitimate uses of it for whistleblowing, which we don't yet have in this country. And I think...
And I presume what you mentioned earlier on, for like countries where freedom of speech is restricted.
Exactly.
It's a great place to get your stuff out there and let people hear it.
Now, the flip side is that there's a huge amount of conspiracy theories being discussed on the darknet as well. But at the same time, you do need in a free and open society, you need to have space for that to be discussed. But I think Irish media organisations, certainly they need to have encrypted email or to have some way for people who think that they or people who are whistleblowing, who are revealing important secrets, need to have that access point so that they can communicate with you. Because if you're in any way paranoid, you will know that you can't just send somebody an email because your email can be traced by the powers that be or whoever, maybe.
There's one here at 51551. It says, the biggest surveillance of the internet is in the US, not China or Russia. Have you not heard of the NSA? Asks Jerry.
And Jerry is, Jerry's right on the money there because there was a lot of talk after the Snowden revelations that, you know, you should only be using Tor because the NSA can't survey that. The funny thing is about Tor, and this is worth saying as well, is that Tor was originally designed by the Naval Research Laboratory in America. So it has been, and now it moved away from that. That was in the 1990s to become an independent project and a charitable foundation and so on. But it's heavily funded by the American government. If you look back through its history, it was originally used when spies would be abroad. So when spies would be abroad and they wanted to email something back, they didn't want, like if they're in China or somewhere, they didn't want the Chinese to know, you know, where exactly they were. So Tor was designed specifically for that, so that the spies' information going back would be masked. So there's a lot of talk as well of, you know, can you de-anonymize somebody's content going through it? So it's hard to know. I mean, I would be taking a lot of the, what would you call it, the evangelism and the around Tor as it being this wonderfully free and perfect thing. I would take an awful lot with a pinch of salt.
Okay, but like if you take the deep web and then the dark web, whatever, we're talking deep web would be academic information or medical records or legal documents or scientific reports or subscription info and all that. But the dark web is drug trafficking and private communications and, as you say, the Tor encrypted sites, the illegal information, etc. I mean, paedophilia and all sorts of porn. I mean, if you think it's bad enough on Google, you know, watch yourself down there. It's bizarre, is it?
Is it
the biggest traffic of all?
That's what some of the research has shown. Now, that research came out, was a UK student who analysed the traffic and was looking for requests and search terms which are going through the Tor network and what they were for, and the majority of it, or at least the largest portion of it, seemed to be for child pornography or child abuse material, which is quite disturbing. And it does seem to be that there is quite an amount of traffic down there in that particular area. Now, there is a certain amount of self-policing that goes on in the different forums around there to keep that out. But it is more likely that you will find it in that, you will find that sort of child abuse material in that part of the internet than you will anywhere else.
Right, yeah. Two more here, just want to mention to you at 51551. Isn't it irresponsible for banks to gradually force customers to rely solely on electronic records without hard copy backup? That comes in from Tom.
I think there is a certain amount of justification in what Tom is saying, because I think... In this country, financial technology or fintech is becoming the new big thing around, you know, protecting these financial assets and so on, which I think we still have a long way to go. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are more breaches on that. I mean, there's this common saying in information security circles is that everybody has been breached, you just don't know it yet.
But I mean, Assange, Snowden, you know, everything else, like even like Ashley Madison, etc. Like, come on, like what claims might have been made that this couldn't be put out there and it's all out there?
That's very true. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, all of these connected systems, I mean, even when you start talking about the Internet of Things and so on,
yeah.
Why do you necessarily...
It seems it's just a bunch of phone calls have come in now and a bunch of texts. I don't have them all. I have one here. I got an email message from Nokia Facebook telling me that I'd won €300,000 and asking for my name, address, etc. Is this a scam, asks Tom. I mean, there's been
definitely
a bunch of others getting phone calls from companies saying that their computers are infected, they need to give them remote access to fix it. I mean, clearly, it's just nonsense. I mean, like, seriously. Like, we were talking about the guy the other day who followed a lot of these guys from, you know, the people who from parts of Africa who are looking for £100,000 to go.
Oh,
home.
Yeah. There is a, I think what we really need in this country is, I mean, the defense white paper was released, is being published today. There's a national cybersecurity strategy was published a couple of months back. But what we really need is more public education around these sort of cyber issues, because, I mean, you know, talking about the darknet or whatever is one thing, but talking about people's financial sense of security, particularly for your listeners, that, you know, when you're using the internet and so on, what you can and what you can't do and what is safe and what isn't, we need a bit more of, I think, government investment into public communication in this area.
Okay, government investment. What about government interference? Here's a question, 51551. Could governments shut the dark web down, asks
no.
Brian.
No. It's simply out of their control at the moment. I think they might be able to monitor it to a certain extent, but I wouldn't be sure about that. Could they shut it down? No.
Can I access the dark web from North Korea? If I was living there,
I would. I think North Korea has something like maybe a small handful of ports of internet which are open to the rest of the world. So you might, but you'd probably get caught very quickly.
Okay, so look, if we take the analogy that you used of the internet being like an iceberg and that the deep web makes up 96% of the internet, which is bizarre, let's change that then by comparing the internet to an onion, which you have mentioned the onion earlier, with the kind of, I presume, the outer layers, the surface web, the part of the internet that we all know and use every day, and the layer under that is the deep web and dark web that we've been talking about. But if you go even deeper and peel away more layers, some say that you come to a place called, is it Mariana's Web? It's named after the deepest part of the Pacific Ocean, Mariana's Trench. What is that?
Yeah.
Or do I really need to know?
I don't think you really need to know, because it doesn't really exist.
Sorry?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. there's a lot of things around this. The thing is that the deep web or the dark net, whichever part of you're talking about, it becomes... From a psychological perspective, it becomes a repository of all of our fears that we project into it in a very Freudian sense. And I think the Mariana's Trench thing is another one of those things where we're saying, well, where is the deepest? How deep does it actually go? It's stretching the whole deep analogy to extremes.
So it's a conspiracy theory. It just thrives on the deep web.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of things that are, I mean, the sort of things, I think an awful lot of this is dreamt up by American teenage boys who start making things up and they tell each other and then it becomes a bit of a myth. So there's things which they've talked about that you can find down there, like, where you can, yeah, I won't go into it, but
the self-flagellating Illuminati,
all that kind of stuff, all of the conspiracy theories,
right.
And but you can find that weird stuff on the surface web. You can Google it if you want and look for David Icke and his reptilians and so on. But it's again, I think it's this whole, you know, it's like Nietzsche said, you look into the abyss and the abyss looks into you. And
oh, wow, I remember Friedrich Nietzsche, who died in 1900. I studied him in college. Fascinating bloke. By the way, there's one here that says, like, you know, that cybercrime, it's the fastest growing crime. We know that from stuff like CSI Cyber, that the deep web is increasingly where police investigations take place, etc. They do, don't they? They do be after going down there and checking it out.
Did you?
Yeah, okay. So, but the star of the series, played by Patricia Arquette, is based on your colleague, Mary Aiken.
That's
so
correct.
Are your skills being increasingly called upon by the police?
Well, the thing is, really, is that we do talk to the police, but what is kind of more problematic about this is that the police need to know about these, the Garda need to know about it, they need to be trained, they need to be resourced, which, you know, I can't actually do. Yeah. So there are, I mean, it's the same when you talk about things like, you know, there's that bill that was is trying to go through the rocks at the moment around making cyberbullying illegal. It really doesn't make any difference if you don't have a police force which is properly resourced to deal with these things. Yeah. And that is something which I think the government should also have a look at.
All right. Well, listen, cyber psychologist Ciarán McMahon, fascinating stuff. If you do have to go down there to the deep web or the dark web or the whatever else, the invisible web or the hidden web, then go ahead. But you're on your own. I'm not going there. Thanks a million. Good man. Take it easy.